Chapter 82. Showing that old friends may not only appear with new faces, but in false colors. That people are prone to bite, and that biters may sometimes be bitten. Mr. Bailey Jr. for the sporting character, Willem of General Utility at Todgers, had now regularly set up in life under that name, without troubling himself to obtain from the legislature a direct license in the form of a private bill, which of all kinds and classes of bills is without exception the most unreasonable in its charges. Mr. Bailey Jr., just tall enough to be seen by an inquiring eye, gazing indolently at society from beneath the apron of his master's cab, drove slowly up and down Pall Mall, about the hour of noon, in waiting for his governor. Apostrophe the horse of distinguished family, who had Capricorn for his nephew, and Cauliflower for his brother, showed himself worthy of his high relations, by champing at the bit until his chest was white with foam, and rearing like a horse in heraldry. The plated harness and the patent leather glittered in the sun. Pedestrians admired. Mr. Bailey was complacent, but unmoved. He seemed to say, "A barrow, good people, a mere barrow, nothing to what we could do, if we chose." Apostrophe, apostrophe, and on he went, squaring his short green arms outside the apron, as if he were hooked onto it by his armpits. Mr. Bailey had a great opinion of brother to Cauliflower, and estimated his powers highly. But he never told him so. On the contrary, it was his practice, in driving that animal, to assail him with disrespectful, if not injurious, expressions, as, "Ah, would you? Apostrophe, apostrophe, did you think it then? Apostrophe, where are you going to now? No, you won't, my lad." Apostrophe, apostrophe, and similar fragmentary remarks. These being usually accompanied by a jerk of the rein, or a crack of the whip, led to many trials of strength between them, and to many contentions for the upper hand, terminating, now and then, in china shops, and other unusual goals, as Mr. Bailey had already hinted to his friend Paul Sweetlepipe. On the present occasion, Mr. Bailey, being in spirits, was more than commonly hard upon his charge, in consequence of which that fiery animal confined himself almost entirely to his hind legs in displaying his paces, and constantly got himself in two positions with reference to the cabriolet, that very much amazed the passengers in the street. But Mr. Bailey, not at all disturbed, had still a shower of pleasantries to bestow on anyone who crossed his path, as, calling to a full-grown coal heaver in a wagon, who for a moment blocked the way, "Now, young un, who trusted you with a cart?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, inquiring of elderly ladies who wanted to cross, and ran back again, why they didn't go to the workhouse, and get an order to be buried? Apostrophe, apostrophe, tempting boys, with friendly words, to get up behind, and immediately afterwards cutting them down, and the like flashes of a cheerful humor, which he would occasionally relieve, by going round St. James Square at a hand gallop, and coming slowly into Pall Mall by another entry, as if, in the interval, his pace had been a perfect crawl. It was not until these amusements had been very often repeated, and the apple stall at the corner had sustained so many miraculous escapes, as to appear impregnable, that Mr. Bailey was summoned to the door of a certain house in Pall Mall, and turning short, obeyed the call and jumped out. It was not until he had held the bridle for some minutes longer, every jerk of Cauliflower's brother's head, and every twitch of Cauliflower's brother's nostril, taking him off his legs in the meanwhile, that two persons entered the vehicle, one of whom took the reins, and drove rapidly off. Nor was it until Mr. Bailey had run after it some hundreds of yards in vain, that he managed to lift his short leg into the iron step, and finally to get his boots upon the little footboard behind. Then, indeed, he became a sight to see, and standing now on one foot and now upon the other, now trying to look round the cab on this side, now on that, and now endeavoring to peep over the top of it, as it went dashing in among the carts and coaches, was from head to heel Newmarket. The appearance of Mr. Bailey's governor as he drove along fully justified that enthusiastic youth's description of him to the wondering Pole. He had a world of jet-black shining hair upon his head, upon his cheeks, upon his chin, upon his upper lip. His clothes, symmetrically made, were of the newest fashion and the costliest kind. Flowers of gold and blue, and green and blushing red, were on his waistcoat. Precious chains and jewels sparkled on his breast. His fingers, clogged with brilliant rings, were as unwieldy as summer flies, but newly rescued from a honey pot. The daylight mantled in his gleaming hat and boots as in a polished glass. And yet, though changed his name, and changed his outward surface, it was Tig. Though turned and twisted upside down, and inside out, as great men have been sometimes known to be, though no longer Montague Tig, but Tig Montague, still it was Tig. The same satanic, gallant, military Tig. The brass was burnished, lacquered, newly stamped, yet it was the true Tig metal notwithstanding. Beside him sat a smiling gentleman, of less pretensions, and of business looks, whom he addressed as David. Surely not the David of the, how shall it be phrased, the triumvirate of golden balls? Not David, tapster at the Lombard's Arms? Yes, the very man. The secretary's salary, David, apostrophe said Mr. Montague, the office being now established, is £800 per annum, with his house rent, coals, and candles free. His 25 shares he holds, of course. Is that enough? Apostrophe, David smiled and nodded, and coughed behind a little locked portfolio which he carried, with an air that proclaimed him to be the secretary in question. If that's enough, apostrophe said Montague, I will propose it at the board today, in my capacity as chairman. Apostrophe, the secretary smiled again, laughed, indeed, this time, and said, rubbing his nose slyly with one end of the portfolio. It was a capital thought, wasn't it? Apostrophe, apostrophe, what was a capital thought, David? Apostrophe, apostrophe, Mr. Montague inquired. The Anglo-Bengali, apostrophe tittered the secretary. The Anglo-Bengali Disinterested Loan and Life Assurance Company is rather a capital concern, I hope, David, apostrophe said Montague. Capital indeed. Apostrophe, apostrophe cried the secretary, with another laugh apostrophe in one sense. Apostrophe, and the only important one, apostrophe observed the chairman, which is number one. David. Apostrophe, what? Apostrophe asked the secretary, bursting into another laugh. What will be the paid-up capital according to the next prospectus? Apostrophe, apostrophe, a figure of two, and as many oughts after it as the printer can get into the same line, apostrophe replied his friend. Ha, ha. Apostrophe, at this they both laughed. The secretary so vehemently, that in kicking up his feet, he kicked the apron open, and nearly started Cauliflower's brother into an oyster shop, not to mention Mr. Bailey's receiving such a sudden swing, that he held on for a moment quite a young fame, by one strap and no legs. What a chap you are! Apostrophe, apostrophe, exclaimed David admiringly, when this little alarm had subsided. Say, genius, David. Genius. Apostrophe, well, upon my soul, you are a genius then, apostrophe said David. I always knew you had the gift of the gab, of course, but I never believed you were half the man you are. How could I? Apostrophe, I rise with circumstances, David. That's a point of genius in itself, apostrophe said Tig. If you were to lose a £100 wager to me at this minute, David, and were to pay it, which is most confoundedly improbable, I should rise, in a mental point of view, directly. Apostrophe, it is due to Mr. Tig to say that he had really risen with his opportunities, and, peculating on a grander scale, he had become a grander man altogether. Ha, ha, apostrophe cried the secretary, laying his hand, with growing familiarity, upon the chairman's arm. When I look at you, and think of your property in Bengal being ha, 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 apostrophe, the half-expressed idea seemed no less ludicrous to Mr. Tick than to his friend, for he laughed too, heartily. Apostrophe being, apostrophe resumed David, being amenable your property in Bengal being amenable to all claims upon the company, when I look at you, and think of that, you might tickle me in two fits, by waving the feather of a pen at me. Upon my soul you might. Apostrophe, it a devilish fine property, apostrophe said Tig Montague, to be amenable to any claims. The preserve of tigers alone is worth a mint of money, David. Apostrophe, David could only reply in the intervals of his laughter, oh, what a chap you are. Apostrophe, apostrophe, and so continued to laugh, and hold his sides, and wipe his eyes, for some time, without offering any other observation. A capital idea? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Tig, returning after a time to his companion's first remark. No doubt it was a capital idea. It was my idea. Apostrophe, no, no. It was my idea, apostrophe, said David. Hang it, let a man have some credit. Didn't I say to you, that I'd saved a few pounds? Apostrophe, you said. Didn't I say to you, apostrophe, interposed Tig, that I had come into a few pounds? Apostrophe, apostrophe, certainly you did, apostrophe, returned David, warmly, but that's not the idea. Who said, that if we put the money together we could furnish an office, and make a show? Apostrophe, apostrophe, and who said, apostrophe, retorted Mr. Tig, that, provided we did it on a sufficiently large scale, we could furnish an office and make a show, without any money at all? Be rational, and just, and calm, and tell me whose idea was that? Apostrophe, why, there, apostrophe, David was obliged to confess, you had the advantage of me, I admit. But I don't put myself on a level with you. I only want a little credit in the business. Apostrophe, all the credit you deserve to have, apostrophe, said Tig. The plain work of the company, David figures, books, circulars, advertisements, pen, ink, and paper, sealing wax and wafers is admirably done by you. You are a first-rate groveler. I don't dispute it. But the ornamental department, David, the inventive and poetical department, apostrophe, is entirely yours, apostrophe, said his friend. No question of it. But with such a swell turnout as this, and all the handsome things you've got about you, and the life you lead, I mean to say it's a precious comfortable department too. Apostrophe, does it gain the purpose? Is it Anglo-Bengali? Apostrophe asked Tig. Yes, apostrophe, said David. Could you undertake it yourself? Apostrophe, apostrophe, demanded Tig. No, apostrophe, said David. Ha, ha! Apostrophe, apostrophe, laughed Tig. Then be contented with your station and your profits, David, my fine fellow, and bless the day that made us acquainted across the counter of our common uncle, for it was a golden day to you. Apostrophe, it will have been already gathered from the conversation of these worthies, that they were embarked in an enterprise of some magnitude, in which they addressed the public in general from the strong position of having everything to gain, and nothing at all to lose, and which, based upon this great principle, was thriving pretty comfortably. The Anglo-Bengali Disinterested Loan and Life Assurance Company started into existence one morning, not an infant institution, but a grown-up company running alone at a great pace, and doing business right and left. With a branch in a first floor over a tailor's at the west end of the town, and main offices in a new street in the city, comprising the upper part of a spacious house resplendent in stucco and plate glass, with wire blinds in all the windows, and Anglo-Bengali worked into the pattern of every one of them. On the doorpost, was painted again in large letters, Offices of the Anglo-Bengali Disinterested Loan and Life Assurance Company, apostrophe, and on the door, was a large brass plate with the same inscription. All was kept very bright, as courting inquiry, staring the city out of countenance after office hours on working days, and all day long on Sundays, and looking bolder than the bank. Within, the offices were newly plastered, newly painted, newly papered, newly countered, newly floor clothed, newly tabled, newly chaired, newly fitted up in every way, with goods that were substantial and expensive, and designed, like the company, to last. Business. Look at the green ledgers with red backs, like strong cricket balls beaten flat, the court guides, directories, day books, almanacs, letter boxes, weighing machines for letters, rows of fire buckets for dashing out a conflagration in its first spark, and saving the immense wealth in notes and bonds belonging to the company. Look at the iron safes, the clock, the office seal in its capacious self, security for anything. Solidity. Look at the massive blocks of marble in the chimney pieces, and the gorgeous parapet on the top of the house. Publicity. Why, Anglo-Bengali Disinterested Loan and Life Assurance Company is painted on the very coal scuttles. It is repeated at every turn until the eyes are dazzled with it, and the head is giddy. It is engraved upon the top of all the letter paper, and it makes a scroll work round the seal, and it shines out of the porter's buttons, and it is repeated 20 times in every circular and public notice wherein one David Crimple Esquire, secretary and resident director, takes the liberty of inviting your attention to the accompanying statement of the advantages offered by the Anglo-Bengali Disinterested Loan and Life Assurance Company, and fully proves to you that any connection on your part with that establishment must result in a perpetual Christmas box, and constantly increasing bonus to yourself, and that nobody can run any risk by the transaction except the office, which, in its great liberality, is pretty sure to lose. And this, David Crimple Esquire, submits to you, and the odds are heavy you believe him, is the best guarantee that can reasonably be suggested by the Board of Management for its permanence and stability. This gentleman's name, by the way, had been originally Crimp, but as the word was susceptible of an awkward construction, and might be misrepresented, he had altered it to Crimple. Lest with all these proofs and confirmations, any man should be suspicious of the Anglo-Bengali Disinterested Loan and Life Assurance Company, should doubt in Tiger, Cab, or Person, Tig Montague Esquire, of Pall Mall and Bengal, or any other name in the imaginative list of directors. There was a porter on the premises, a wonderful creature, in a vast red waistcoat and a short-tailed pepper and salt coat, who carried more conviction to the minds of skeptics than the whole establishment without him. No confidences existed between him and the directorship. Nobody knew where he had served last. No character or explanation had been given or required. No questions had been asked on either side. This mysterious being, relying solely on his figure, had applied for the situation, and had been instantly engaged on his own terms. They were high, but he knew, doubtless, that no man could carry such an extent of waistcoat as himself, and felt the full value of his capacity to such an institution. When he sat upon a seat erected for him in a corner of the office, with his glazed hat hanging on a peg over his head, it was impossible to doubt the respectability of the concern. It went on doubling itself with every square inch of Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.